This is the Roaring Often podcast, and we're back with a good positive vibe. I was going to talk about something that we love and is always truthful, never has let us down ever, and Dave particularly has a fond passion for the whole topic. It's called
Indeed.
Benchmarks.
Indeed, engaging with a discussion with my my CTO of the Roaring Elephant podcast here, that is Chief Thumbnail Officer. This was a topic that actually sort of popped back up on my radar. We've touched on this probably a couple of times through the many years of the podcast duration, but this popped up back on my radar after I read a LinkedIn post from someone who was from a vendor and was talking about another vendor's benchmarking of their thing versus the other thing. And lots of, I wouldn't say lots of mud was thrown, but lots of aspersions were cast, and it sort of brought back to me the time when I was sort of most, I think, ingrained in benchmarking type conversations, which was kind of the early to mid sort of times at Hortonworks, when the worlds of big data were flowing with cash and honey and data. And at that time, three, I would say, main vendors were regularly kind of throwing daggers at each other, usually around either comparing the things that they all had in common, so the tools that they shipped, they all shipped together, and you know, comparing those things, or comparing technologies that they shipped that did a thing with another vendor's different technology that also did that same thing. And while we all know the common phrase lies, damn lies and statistics, it often can also be applied to the world of benchmarks as well. But before we dive into the topic that, you know, I had framed up, what's your opinion on benchmarks as a whole, John?
It's a sad feeling, because actually benchmarks should be able, in an ideal world, to have a function to help people make decisions, because it's a comparison tool. And especially for the Hortonworks, I mean, the big data, the whole Hadoop era, it was totally new. Nobody knew what it was doing, and it had a lot of promises, and nobody knew if the promises were true or not. And yeah, show me the numbers, show me what it actually can do. And that's where benchmarks could potentially have a very good reason of being.
Yeah.
The problem is that instead of it being a technology tool, it has very much become a marketing tool.
Mm.
And marketing and politics, and everything goes to shit.
Fair enough. All right. So the reason that I have such a, I think, a genuine sense of pride for how the company that I worked for at the time, in fact, we both worked for a period of time, Hortonworks, conducted themselves.
That era.
Indeed. Like how Hortonworks evolved their kind of response, I guess, to benchmarks, and therefore evolved their approach towards benchmarking, I think was actually like pretty cool and pretty interesting. And I think there were two main things that I liked about the way that they did it. The first one was that the test suite that they used for whatever tool it was, the thing that they were testing it against was something that came from an independent organization. I want to say, is it TPC DSS, was that it?
God.
Well, there were a couple of public standard
TPC
benchmarks.
DS. Yeah. Sorry, I think that's it. Yeah, so TPCDS. So TPC.org is a, he says, waiting for his browser to load. But like the TPC is a an independent organization that creates benchmarks for different kinds of use cases. And back in the day, you saw these benchmarks used pretty heavily in different organizations. As Jan said, like marketing spiel of how they wanted to do things. I guess TPC.org is hosted on a Windows machine because it ain't loading. Anyway, so that was one thing that, from memory, they pretty much standardized on, we will just take the TPCDS or the whichever TPC benchmark it was that was relevant, we'll just take that and we'll just run it. Like, we won't tweak the queries, we won't change things, we won't like monkey about with settings so that we perform better. They just took the benchmark framework as it was and executed it. That was one thing that I really, really liked. The second thing that I really liked is, and this is where I think most organizations slip up on, if anything, is that they would, you know, it was all fully automated as you might expect, but they would basically just deploy using the installer that you got with the platform onto, you know, vanilla, well understood architecture, and they would run the benchmark. That was it. There was no, oh, well, we'll just like change these settings and tweak that and tune that and change that. They deliberately wanted to make sure that the installer and its, you know, any form of auto setup wizardry and magic that came with it was, that was the setup that they were testing. And I thought that was really, really interesting, because we often see people kind of tuning and optimizing things for the best performance. And the reality is, in a lot of systems, again, in my experience, a lot of people are very good at, okay, I've just set up a thing. Now, how should I tune it? Oh, let me go and browse to another website and search for a whole bunch of guides on how people tune these things, apply a whole bunch of settings that the internet tells me to do, and then, you know, hit submit and go and just hope that that's the best thing to do. And A, I don't think that's a very good way to optimize anything that you deploy, unless you really are doing something exactly the same as everyone else. But genuinely, I think that especially the vendors of tools, like if you've got an open source project, you know, you do you. As long as you deploy something that works, you know, everyone else can feel free to tune things after. But I think if you are a vendor, you owe it to your customers to do something above and beyond just slapping the bits somewhere they can be executed. And I think AltaWorks back in the day did a really good job of making sure that things were done, deployed in a way where detection happened and a lot of optimization happened during that setup process. So, yeah, fond memories, I would say.
Yeah, but it also, it's still a problem, because the one hand doing it, so doing no tuning, optimizing, just installing it, it makes it reproducible, it makes it quote unquote honest, I guess. But you still are a victim of the defaults, because these things were very tunable, and yeah, two different systems could be very different depending on how they were tuned and polished. And for a vendor, you typically want to optimize by default for the most common deployed form factor, whatever that is. in a big data solution like a Hortonworks, for example, that would be a multi-node environment of 10 to 20, maybe 15, that kind of range. Benchmarks, however, are typically ran on 2 nodes, 4 nodes, whatever the minimal product is, because it takes a lot of money to set it all up for a silly benchmark, to be honest. Which means that out of the box, it becomes optimized for something it's not running on. Another vendor could say, okay, we're going to play really for the benchmarking crowd and optimize their solution for the benchmarks by default, which means that everybody buying it because their benchmarks were better were actually getting a worse experience because it wasn't tuned for the probable use case environment that they were actually working in. So even at that point, I mean, you still... I think the main thing is you need to remember that benchmarks are synthetic. Now, there is a different kind of benchmarks. We're going to talk about that later in a second, I think. But typical benchmarks we're talking about now are synthetic benchmarks. Just like if you're going for gaming video cards, the handbrake stuff, the time spy things and whatever, those are synthetic benchmarks that allow you to compare two apples to see which one is the roundest. But if you don't like round apples, it won't be interesting for you, although you can still see which one is the roundest. So it's always an exercise of extrapolation from what those synthetic benchmarks say to, is this result interesting for me? Because sometimes the best resulting benchmark product might not be your best choice because I think their benchmarking is not that important for you. Typically, when I look at, I mean, I'm a bit of a geek. I have built my own PCs, CPUs, graphics cards. I love looking at those charts. What's often there is how fast they are and how quick they are and the frame rates and stuff like that. For some of my computers, what I'm interested in is total power usage. And I would very much like to see benchmarks on frames per watts or something like that. Those things are pretty much impossible to find. And that's not surprising because it's hard to do because you can overclock stuff and things like that. But there you could say, okay, with the standard stock, whatever, give me that information, but that's very hard to find usually. So again, benchmarks, they should be done in a way that are honorable, is that a word? Honor marketing.
Yeah.
But always remember that, I mean, here in the Netherlands, we have the expression, wij van wc eens, which pretty much means me selling product X. I'm not going to say product X is bad. Always keep it in mind. If you're talking to a vendor, Even if they are totally ethical and totally honest, there's a reason they work for the company they work for, because they like the product, hopefully. If you're working somewhere, you don't like the products, please go away. But there will be an impossible to avoid bias involved always, and that will also show in the benchmarks. In the end, you want to show off how good your product is. And it's so easy, just, we have all of these nice graphs and this one's a bit, well, let's not show that one then. It's always going to be in there. So if you can't look at benchmarks, don't go for a single company, but go for all the competitors, look at all the benchmarks, and then compare them yourself. The problem there is that takes effort.
And
in today's age, I'm not going to talk about the TikTok generation because that's way too simplified for it. But there is a fact that we just don't either take or have the time to really do good analysis of that stuff. I mean, I just bought a new desk to replace the little desk I have here. I have spent 6 months finding the ideal desk. I'm probably going to be disappointed by now because I have such a great idea it's going to be. But it doesn't matter. I looked at every desk out there. What the pros and cons were. I learned more about hydraulics than you ever want to know. But that's me about a stupid desk, which probably I would have bought anyway because it looked nice. But it takes a lot of time for these things. And these tech benchmarks, if you don't know how they're being ran, if you don't know the ins and outs behind it, apart from pretty pictures, they don't tell you anything. And I'm just going to last feeling for me. Well, I've seen a lot happening now because we're in the AMD is putting up a new generation of CPUs currently, so they're presenting graphs and stuff like that. And a lot of times reviewers say the graphs are horrible because they don't have any units, they don't have any, that's just pretty colors. But that being said, if they had a lot of information, it would be a book this thick and nobody would read them anyway. So can you blame them for just putting up, say nothing charts It's just, yeah, it's marketing.
Graph goes up and to the right, therefore it equals better.
Yeah, of course it's the loss graph, but let's not talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, the point around vendors optimizing for benchmarks versus real world. Yeah, it's a sad fact that there are a number of vendors I can think of over the years that got caught out for having products that did specific things that changed their behavior if they detected Dieselgate. A benchmark was being run. Dieselgate's a classic example of that. Let's switch to an alternate map to if we detect.
Did you get the one from Tesla?
No.
It came out last couple of weeks that it's about a self-driving thing, which isn't a self-driving thing. I forget the actual name for the thing, but that self-driving stuff, apparently the machine learning is being optimized on the routes where Elon Musk drives and the highly popular influencers, so they have a better experience. So this is not a benchmark, but it's the same thing, right? And actually, benchmarks are being replaced by influencers. YouTubers and stuff like that have kind of replaced the benchmarks. If you trust a YouTuber and he says it's a good thing, I guess it's a good thing. But apparently, even there, you just don't know how you're being bamboozled.
Yeah, that is crazy.
I love that one because of how much I hated it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think it's easier the simpler the thing is that you're benchmarking. Like the fewer variables that you need to consider, the easier your life is, and possibly the more accurate / relevant any given benchmark might be. But that's kind of why I remember thinking at the time that Hortonworks did a very good job of this, because the installer was responsible for optimizing the deployment and making sure the appropriate tuning settings were automatically applied, and they just installed all three or two, depending on what the comparison was, platforms with their out of the box results, and just ran the benchmark. And I think we expect, because a lot of these platforms nowadays are so complicated, like we have lost a lot of that. It's very rarely now do I see anything that deploys, very rarely actually now do I see anything that deploys out of the box with more than just its vanilla set of settings that are embedded. There's no thought given to what you're deploying onto. You need to go and manually tweak, tune, change a whole bunch of stuff. And especially in the world that we live in now, that to me feels really antiquated given where we were 5, 6, 7 years ago with some of this stuff, where people were already thinking about, how about we don't just bundle a standard set of config? How about we actually look at the environment this is being deployed in, and we make sane, sensible choices to optimize what we're doing based on where we're deploying?
But wasn't it because they had to? Because ever since Hadoop, I have not seen a more complex ecosystem of products being sold as a bundled solution. So not having any kind of auto-optimizing out of the box, it would have been so hopeless for people to even start working with that things. That's how Hadoop is still around. Hadoop has never gone away. It's just no longer that big multitude of things. It's now individual things you connect up together. So doing an optimization step on each individual step will be bad at that point, because you don't know how the other thing, if they all auto-optimize on themselves, this complete environment would maybe not be good anymore. So that's why, just what I see a lot now is that products are being defaulted to something that will always work. at least somewhat, versus, because the more you tune to a certain something, the more risk you run, you do something that breaks something. So people also have become a lot less willing to, and I guess I'm generalizing, there are exceptions definitely, but a lot less willing to experiment by themselves.
Absolutely.
And open source used to be, if you go for open source, hey, you have your toolkit, you put in your overalls, you're going to plumb that stuff. You're not going to just install it. You know you're going to spend the next month tweaking, twiddling, reinstalling 4 or 5 times. With the improvements in open source, which has improved a lot since then. I mean, open source is a business model now and it works pretty well. But it also has different expectations now. Even if it's open source, I'm still expecting it to install and run out of the box without me having to tweak it. And that's a different mindset as well.
Yeah, I will sidestep the open source as a business model thing because that's a whole different kettle of strawberries. But
next episode.
Yeah, I just think that we've regressed as an industry, as a software industry, and I think you're right, but that doesn't mean that that is right. Like I'm not saying it's better. Yeah, exactly. I do genuinely think that we have regressed as an industry, and that is the kind of thing that we should be embracing. Like, we've got so much more compute power, so much more knowledge of how we could be testing this stuff.
Did the fact that a CD-ROM could contain a lot more information than a floppy disk make us create more efficient programs?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Have you ever played a modern FMV game? Yeah, no, I get it. But just because it hasn't worked out that way, that doesn't mean I can't lament the fact that we should be doing better as an industry.
Yeah, but benchmarks, synthetic benchmarks are flawed by design. If not at the beginning, at least now, you shouldn't even... The only time that I use a benchmark is to figure out who the players are and how they position themselves. Apart from that, I usually take no value from benchmarks at all, which is not to say that benchmarks are always bad, because there is a type of benchmark that is very useful, and I hope everybody, every time they do something, uses. And that's the not-synthetic benchmarks, the real ones. Mm. Basically, configuring, installing whatever you need, having something that you think works okay, and then have your own bunch of queries, bunch of tasks, synthetic tests, whatever, which you can rerun after an update, after something changed, to see if you improved or regressed. And that's a different way of looking at benchmarks. That's nothing to do with marketing, because it's stuff you build yourself. Sadly, of course, as I mentioned earlier, that requires effort, and more effort is good. But that is something that I always advise my customers, because I kind of like that my company doesn't do a lot of benchmarking at all. There's some stuff out there, but the real benchmarks wars have slowed down a little bit, at least in the eco bubble that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I do tell my customers, if you have it run and it's going well, and you know you're going to go at least try to follow the upgrade cadence, have something set up that you can just in your dev test environment see if there's regressions, if there's something you need to tweak, if something changes, have some kind of, even if it's just a machine learning model doing anomaly detection on simple tasks, have something in place to give you that peace of mind, which would perhaps mean that your Windows system did not crash today.
I mean, the final thing that I would probably add to all this is, we're talking about this mainly from the perspective of thinking about either being the person that configures and runs the service, or looking at another vendor's benchmark. But probably what dovetails really nicely onto what you were just talking about, Jan, is the fact that the world is sassier than ever. And by SaaS, of course, I'm thinking software as a service rather than the other mention of SaaS. And for that, obviously, that means that very rarely do you have much of an ability to change any of the, change or tune the sort of SaaS platform that you're running on. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be, to Jon's point, still running your own benchmarks, doing your own testing. You absolutely should. And that's more so that you can detect maybe either changes in, you know, that vendor's platform that you maybe otherwise wouldn't see, but also you can detect changes in how you use that platform. Maybe you run something on that that provider's platform. Maybe it's like a Kubernetes environment or something like that. Or maybe it's something that you consume by sending data and querying data from it and that sort of thing. Well, either way, you should know by default, you know, what a normal experience for that looks like. And it sort of should be something that you're tracking and something that you're aware of. And you're then able to more easily detect when that deviates from a normal experience and hopefully catch that before your users do.
Yeah, but to be honest, the lack of configurability in general is one of the reasons that I don't like SaaS. I mean, some things are fine in SaaS because you don't want to tune or optimize or anything. It's just something you consume and it should do its thing and I don't care how it does it, fine. But SaaSifying your entire core business, not being able to configure and optimize means you lose your ability to be different, to differentiate yourself, at least at some level. But I know I'm alone yelling against the storm, against the windmills.
Yep. Old man yells at clouds. See it here. See it now. And on that note, unless there's anything else from you, Jon?
No, thank you. I have to make some thumbnails.
That is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You could like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about this podcast. And finally, please send any feedback you have to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is, my windows are fine. They are opening, they're closing, they've got blinds. Dave?
And my name is newly minted Chief Thumbnail Operator, Jon.
I look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.